Welcome to another joint Giants Double Play and A's Plus podcast. My name is Henry Schulman. I am the Giants beat reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. I am here with Susan Slusser, the A's beat reporter, and we're here in Las Vegas, Nevada for the third and final full day of baseball's winter meetings. We are going to talk Kyler Murray. We are going to talk Bryce Harper, all coming up after this.
Welcome to day three of the winter meetings. Susan Slusser from the San Francisco Chronicle back with you along with Henry Schulman, our Giants beat writer, to talk about what the A's and Giants have been up to. Henry, today was the big Scott Boras stroll through the lobby and set up next to the Christmas tree, and he was surrounded by hundreds of reporters. I was in the middle of the scrum. I know you were actually even a little closer than I was. What sort of Scott Boras nuggets did you wind up to unearthing with the In that pack?
Well, first of all, before I get to the nuggets, if I didn't do this job for a living, I would buy a press pass, like from a scalper, just for the Scott Boras State of the Boras.
It's a scene.
Address in front of the Christmas tree, hundreds of reporters, security pushing reporters out of the way. Well, you know, Bryce Harper was the big topic of conversation, and Boras' client, that is obvious. And he didn't talk specifics with specific teams, although he did, you know, try to indicate that the Yankees were involved, even if Brian Cashman said they weren't. But what I kind of learned today was that the Giants really aren't talking about Bryce Harper in their suite upstairs at the Delano Hotel. It's not a front burner thing right now. They have a lot of balls in the air, juggling a lot of balls, as Brian Sabian used to say, trying to get pitching, trying to get some corner outfield help, probably on a lesser scale. But you know, the thing I wrote about, and it's up on the website, is that could change. Scott Boras is not shy about coming back to teams, about keep pushing teams that have said we're not interested, holding off signing his guys until January or February when the teams sort of realize they're not as good as they thought they were going to be. I mean, the best example to me was Prince Fielder. I mean, he got Detroit to sign, I think, right as spring training was starting. So I wouldn't expect any Bryce Harper news coming out of the winter meetings for any team, but the Giants in particular. But you know, just keep it in mind that it may not be a dead deal. Now, you have some news from the Scott Boras, what I call the State of the Scott address today too, don't you?
I do. I managed to wriggle my way up close to the front so I could finally yell him a question, of course, about Kyler Murray. I did talk to Scott by phone last week about Kyler Murray, of course, who the A's first pick in last June's draft, number 9 overall, and also the Heisman-winning quarterback at Oklahoma. He's been making noises about potentially having interest in the NFL draft. And Boras told me next week, you know, he's going to fulfill his commitment to the A's. He will be there on the first day of spring training. There's maybe some gray area in that. Like, what does that mean? Does he just have to show up for spring training to get his $4.66 million bonus? Is there a specific time commitment? No, nobody has given any sort of details on the contract. So I tried to get a little bit more today during the Boras scrum. And my first question was, are you still convinced that Kyler Murray will not commit to the NFL draft? And Boras didn't actually answer that. He just said, you know, Kyler knows he's got a great opportunity to be a really good baseball player, and the A's are giving him that opportunity, and I still expect he's going to show up for spring training. Didn't say anything about maybe declaring for the draft one way or another. I still think that's a long shot, but it's interesting that he kind of sidestepped that portion of the question. He's very good at that. Sometimes it's what he doesn't answer that can tell you a little bit more than what he does. And then the second question is a follow-up. I asked him if there's any possibility that Kyler Murray could play both. It hasn't been done for a long time. In the 90s, we obviously saw it with some high-profile guys. Bo Jackson, Deion Sanders, Brian Jordan. Everybody I've talked to who's an NFL expert thinks it's something that you can't do anymore, particularly at a position like quarterback. But just when you declare for the draft, you usually have to go through things like the combine and all the pre-draft workouts. He'll be playing baseball then. If you're under contract to play baseball, they're not going to let you suddenly leave for a week or two for NFL workouts. So it's pretty unlikely. But when I asked him that, he said, I don't know, you'll have to ask Billy Beane. So when the A's met with General Manager David Force today, I asked him about that. The A's have been very careful about the way they respond to Kyler Murray and football questions. They want him, and this is really honest an honest thing from them, very genuine. They want him to enjoy the rest of his college football season, which obviously isn't over. They've got a bowl game on December 29th, potentially in the national championship. I mean, that's a fantastic team. He's a fantastic player. And they've really tried to avoid. They've just said, we want him to enjoy that, and then we'll see him this spring. But today, David Forst said, we haven't talked to Scott Boras or Kyler Murray about playing both. And it would be unfair to say anything about it until we sit down and talk about it. So it didn't sound to me like anybody's necessarily ruling it out, as difficult as it might seem.
Now, Kyler Murray, I found out today, and this is probably common knowledge, but I didn't know it. He's the nephew of former Giant Calvin Murray, who's most famous for being at the plate in Tucson in spring training that year when Randy Johnson killed the pigeon with a fastball.
Here's more better trivia. Calvin Murray works for Scott Boras. He's one of his agents.
Oh, I did not know that.
So yeah, when you kind of take everything into account with the family history and where Calvin's working, you might think, and the fact that that Kyler Murray is really 5'9". He's listed at 5'10". Scott Boras refers to him as 5'9". I've stood next to him. He's not much taller than me. That's tough for an NFL quarterback. I'm not saying he can't play in the NFL at that size, but it's going to be tough for him to see over the line.
I would encourage the younger listeners of this podcast to Google Pat Hayden, Los Angeles Rams. You learn how to just kind of throw the ball over the defensive line at a weird angle. Pat Hayden had to deal with launch angle long before it was popular in baseball.
I believe the NFL defenses are different than they were in Pat Hayden's day.
Yeah, they're a little bigger.
Yeah, and again, talking to a lot of NFL experts, I've talked to way more NFL experts in the last few weeks than I would have expected in a baseball offseason. But the feeling is Kyler Murray's biggest asset is his speed. He's blazing quick. He gets a foot past the defense, and he's gone. In the NFL, some of that is nullified by the fact that the defensive players in the NFL are just as fast. So he's expected to be maybe a late first-round pick. Looking at the late first rounders last year, they're in the $5 million, $6 million range. If he chose to go to the draft and not play baseball, he would have to repay the A's $4.66 million. Mm-hmm. And he's got to juggle, does he get more than that as a whatever pick he gets in the NFL draft? And what's the future income level he might get in the NFL as an undersized player, no matter how great he might be? And at a position where he will probably take a pummeling, especially, depending on what the team is that he goes to. There's no way to know that, what their offensive line is like, all those kind of things. Baseball's a little bit of a more sure thing, especially from a health standpoint, career longevity, things like that. But, who knows? If his first love is football and he wants to play, it could go either way. If it happens, the A's get repaid. They do not get a comp pick in next year's draft because he did sign. So they will be out a first-round pick this year, and it's a team that is really putting an emphasis now on their minor leagues. They'd be out a really terrific outfielder.
Well, that'll be a fascinating thing to watch. I did see Bo Jackson play. You saw him play. I saw him hit a home run against Rick Rushel in the 1989 All-Star game that I believe has not landed yet. I think it's traveling over Yugoslavia or the former Yugoslavia right now.
He was fun to watch.
He was. He really was. But, he did hurt himself badly. And, I don't think Bo Jackson has any regrets, but, he hurt himself badly playing football, had a hip problem, and it kind of shortened his career in both.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Now, I know the Giants have some other news coming out of your Farhan Zaidi session today. Anything of note?
Well, actually, we haven't done Farhan yet as we're taping this, but good transition from Bo Jackson's hip to Buster Posey's hip.
Ooh.
We did talk to Bruce Bochy today. He did his managerial availability, and he had a couple of interesting things to say. First of all, he said that Posey, besides having a torn labrum repaired and having bone spurs removed, that he also had a microfracture. So he had a lot going on in that hip. Excuse me. He also said that by next month, mid-January, Buster should be able to do sprints. He will be kind of slow-played in spring training, but he'll probably play a little bit more first base this year. This is a goal that Bochy has always had. But the hope is that maybe he'll regain some of the pop he's lost. As any hitter would know, you need to be able to clear your hips quickly. to be able to hit a baseball. And he has not been able to do that, at least in the last season, maybe for seasons before that. And one of the things I go back to is in 2011, Buster Posey had that horrible leg break when Scott Cousins ran into him. And Posey spent so much time rehabbing like he's doing now. He came to camp very, very strong. And then he ended up winning the batting title and the MVP in 2012. Now, I'm not saying he's going to win another MVP and batting title because he's going to be 7 years older. But Bochy has the expectation that Buster will be more of a three or four type hitter from a slugging perspective than he was. And that really, more than any power acquisition the Giants can make, would help the team tremendously offensively. They're already paying him. It's not a guy they have to go out and sign or trade for. But, you know, we're not going to be able to see until we get to spring training and in the season.
Yeah, a healthy Buster Posey really could have an immediate impact on the lineup, including other guys who underperformed last year. You know, if that's the case, the Giants might be better than people are projecting, potentially.
Well, I'd like to see who else they get first.
Yeah. Yes, we would all.
You know, this is another thing we talked about with Bruce Bochy. I mean, usually at the winter meetings, their team is set, and they're usually just filling one or two holes. And in this winter meetings, I mean, they're really kind of rebuilding the team. They're looking for two starting pitchers, two starting outfielders, a backup catcher. They're willing to make moves where they trade some relievers but acquire some others that might be a little less expensive or fill a different platoon need and all that. And I asked Bochy today whether it's a little disconcerting for him that 2 months before spring training, he doesn't even know what his team is going to look like. And he said absolutely not, because he trusts Zadie. He's in the room. He's been in the room for 3 days listening to what has been talked about, and he's confident the Giants will acquire some of these players that will, you know, to build the team and make it better. One other interesting thing from the Bochy, of course, yesterday on the podcast, we talked about the fact we talked about the fact that you know, they're going to go to openers. That's what Zadie said yesterday. They're going to go to openers like the A's and Rays and some other teams. And we all kind of wondered, well, how would Bochy deal with it? I mean, old school manager, starters go 6-7 innings. He said he's fine with it. He said he's open to anything. He said he's, you know, he said he's more open-minded than people give him credit for. And really, all he really wants to do is win. The one caveat is that I don't think that Madison Bumgarner is going to come in to pitch after an opener.
Yeah, I would like to see his reaction were that to happen. The A's were linked in a rumor today. I've actually yet to write anything about it, but I have talked to a few people about it. We have talked to each of the last 2 days about the A's quest to either re-sign Jed Lowrie or find a second baseman, everyday second baseman. With the Rangers potentially trading Jerks and Profar, the A's name came up. Apparently, they have checked in. I'm not sure how that would work. The Rangers would like decent prospects back. The A's don't want to trade any of their top prospects. The one thing that could work, potentially, if the A's wanted to do it, was maybe just a straight-up swap of Franklin Barreto for Jerks and Profar. That I could maybe see if that, you know, is something that the Rangers wanted to do, swap an older infielder for a younger infielder.
This is not the Billy Bean I know. Forrest I know.
Yeah, it would be, you know, hey, I'm not ruling anything out, but just looking at the A's prospects and who they might trade, they're not going to, hand over any of their top guys for Jerks and Profar. I think they have probably some better options at second base. And I think they still, you know, I wrote on Monday that they might be moving on from Jed Lowrie. There are kind of some indications if he's asking for too much. Sometimes when teams start talking about other players, that maybe changes the thinking of the original guy. So, I think they would still be open to anything with Jed Lowrie if it wound up being reasonable.
And as long as we're at second base, I think there's been a lot of speculation that the Giants might trade Joe Panik. That's two winners now in a row. Try and go with some younger, more inexpensive guys. He just signed a contract for just under $4 million for next year. Bochy was talking as if Panik is going to be there next year. Now things can change. Zadie indicated, or I've gotten indications from people in the front office, Zadie included, that they're still open. Just because you sign a guy, an arbitration eligible guy, to a 1-year contract doesn't mean you can't move him. In fact, all you have to do, just like in the case of Will Smith, the closer, is offer him tender him a contract, and whether or not they reach agreement or not, he's a signed player. So Smith, of course, is a player that the Giants could move. But he said, Bochy said, this is going to be a big year for Joe Panik. He's got a lot to prove after a really kind of bad season. And I have a feeling that if he doesn't improve a lot, this could very well be his last year, because now in arbitration, he's really going to start to get expensive. And the Giants do have some younger second basemen to look at.
Well, the whole thing about younger players, I'm glad you brought it up. You know, baseball is becoming a game of younger players. A lot of teams, we've seen it everywhere. If you've got a choice between an older, more expensive guy and a younger, up-and-coming, cheaper guy, that's kind of the way the game is going. The A's, I think, would actually, you know, if they can't find terms that they like at second base or catcher, I think they'd be perfectly happy going with Franklin Barreto. I know there are people in the A's organization pushing for Franklin Barreto to get that second base spot. And I think maybe we might see Sean Murphy at catcher, though he's only played a couple games at AAA. We might see him as the A's starting catcher sooner rather than later.
I think the Giants might be a year behind the A's in second base looking at, but they have two guys, Abiatal Avellino, who is the guy they acquired and they really like from the Yankees. He was in Andrew McCutchen deal. And, you know, I mean, that's a guy specifically. I mean, he could be a platoon player. And they have other options like that. But I really do think that for Joe Panik, Joe Panik is healthy, $4 million is a good number. I don't think that they're worried about that. They have it there. And just in terms of younger players, the Giants are still going to be a big market team. They're still going to have a humongous payroll.
That must be rough.
Well, they haven't always spent it wisely, and they have a lot of big contracts that they can't move with older players who are in decline. So I think they're still going to look at younger, big payroll or not, they're going to look at younger players to fill some of these needs, because I don't think they want to slip over that luxury tax cap again.
Well, the A's have potentially a means to save some money over the course of a few years if they do something an American League executive suggested to me today. Chris Davis is going into his final year of arbitration. He is projected to make somewhere in the order of $17, $18 million in arbitration. The A's have talked several times about a multi-year extension for him. They love him. He loves playing in Oakland. I think it's definitely a mutual thing. They would both like to get something done. But the A's don't have a ton of money. They've got a smaller budget. The executive pointed out to me today, first of all, the A's would give, obviously I'm guessing here, but it seems like they would certainly give him a qualifying offer after the end of next season. That's going to be around $18 million. So you're looking right now at 2 years and $35 million for the next 2 years for Chris Davis, somewhere in there. Why not then just add on a third or fourth year? He sources absolutely tell me that he would for sure have more years and a lower total value per year to get the extra years. So you bring down the total contract per year value by adding on a couple extra years, maybe get him for 3 years and $42 million, 4 years, $48 million, something like that, $50 million. Why not do that? Save yourself a little bit per year. You love him. He's a DH. He stays healthy. He's hit more home runs than anyone in baseball over the last 3 years.
Yeah, a guy who hits 40 homers every year. That must be nice.
40, yeah, exactly. There you go. 40 homers and 100 RBIs, 3 years in a row. Only the second player in A's history to do that after Jimmy Fox.
And
That's pretty great. So
Jimmy Fox was like in the 70s,
very
right?
Very reliable. And he's extremely reliable. He's hit .247 4 years in a row. So he's easy to project. And he's very healthy, and he loves Oakland. And how do you find those numbers on the open market or develop it?
Well, it's hard, and that's been the Giants' issue all along. And right now, that's why they need to find corner outfielders with pop. And corner outfielders with pop are not easy to
get. Exactly. So, you know, the A's are set here, I think, with Chris Davis. He loves it. Looking at it from Chris Davis's vantage, not only does he love it, he loves Bob Melvin. But the market for sluggers can be very strange. It's weird. The game now is a game of home runs and strikeouts, which is his game. And yet when big home run hitters go on the open market, sometimes there's, you know, Jose Bautista, nothing. Even Encarnacion, JD Martinez, their value is a little less than projected when they were on the open market. Chris Carter, nothing after 41 home run seasons. So it's a little risky for him, and he'll be 33 going into that season in 2021, after the next 2 years, and we're just talking, it's a younger man's game. I think a long-term deal, 3-4 years, I think would be perfect for both sides. So I'm hoping they get that done. I think that would work out really well for everyone. But everyone keeps saying, like, he signed through 2019. Really what people should be focused on is, really he's going to be with the A's most likely for at least the next 2 years.
Well, if the A's don't want him, they should give Zadie a call.
Who wouldn't take him? Put him back in the outfield. Always an adventure. Well, Henry, I believe we will try to do another one of these to wrap things up tomorrow before we head off our various flights.
I would say 40 minutes on the Rule 5 draft. Yeah, I think would be perfect.
Yes, break down the entire thing,
yep.
Team by team.
Team by team, yeah. And then the AAA Rule 5 draft and the AA Rule 5 draft all the way down.
We have a tentative plan for a Day 4 wrap-up tomorrow, and if not, we will try to get something up in the next couple of days to wrap things up, but we have really enjoyed doing this podcast daily from the winter meetings at Mandalay Bay, and we hope you have enjoyed it too. Thanks so much for listening, and hopefully we'll be back tomorrow.
Giants Double Play is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Audrey Cooper is the editor-in-chief. If you like this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a minute to give us a quick review, that helps us build our audience so we can keep growing. Follow me on Twitter, @HankShulman. You can support Giants Double Play and a lot of great journalism with a subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. There are print and digital editions. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.